Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is an experimental live Waypoint UK podcast from Rezd. This might sound awful, and if it does, we'll never use it. But if we do, I'm joined by two very cool game developers. I, being Mike Diver, I should introduce myself, shouldn't I? I work at Waypoint, and I'm joined by Moo Yu.
Hello.
Hi, from Foam Sword.
Yep.
And also James Brown from Bone Loaf.
Hello.
And a gender, sorry.
And this is Rex.
Sorry,
hello.
Rex.
My name is Rex Crow. I'm a game developer, and I'm here now.
This is what happens when you have three mics. For the record, then, I might say Kate Gray's here as well. Kate, say hello.
Hello.
So there's lots of us, and we're going to pass the mic around a little bit, because why not? But I just wanted to, yeah, because we're at Rezd. For anyone who doesn't know what Rezd is, it's a pretty cool indie games event that happens in London, and that's why I thought it'd be cool to drag people behind two very cool-looking games here. So, gentlemen, your games, where are they at? What are they doing? I played Knights and Bikes, which is yours, yep. Moo, earlier on. I've played Gang Beasts in the past. It's still around being shown,
yeah.
Like what's the state of play with these bad boys?
So we've been showing it for the last 10 years at events. we have emails telling us, you know, you've been developing this game for 6 years now, but no, we're pretty close now. We haven't, you know, we've never been through certification before. We did all our development experimentally live in public. Like there is, you know, in 4 or 5 year time, if we're still doing post launch content or things like that, it's going to be quite interesting to see what it looks like at that point. But yeah, we've system complete. We've got the full lock on content for getting released. We just need to do some kind of TCR stuff, basically, like replace the UI to make it more functional, more accessible, more intuitive, and immediate.
There's something about making Gang Beasts more intuitive that doesn't sound right.
Just the menus, just the annoyances. Like we have some issues online with some of the levels where they can become difficult to get a win scenario, but right. Especially on trucks at the moment, just colliders and some legacy stuff. So we've gone through and replaced everything with box colliders or primitive colliders just to make it just to help the physics to calculate more evenly. And we're improving the camera, and that's about it really. And finally, all we need to do. So there's 16 levels publicly, and I think about 11 of them are set up online currently. In the release of the next couple of weeks, we should get up to 16 levels, all the public levels online, and then we can finish off the kind of bonus launch kind of content, anything else we can sneak in.
The bonus launch, that's a funny
there's
thing
some
to say, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff there. It's just really what we're going to do, because people assume the game's been released, and it
kind
has
of,
effectively
yeah,
on
yeah.
early access, but we there was a kind of a discrepancy between Steam and console, because obviously console fans are not reading Steam posts, and that's where we were exclusively communicating, really. So we've done some work on updating the FAQ recently, because now everything's locked down, it's much easier to communicate what's coming. But you know, we kind of anticipate or expect on early access to just be able to put stuff in, let people see it, test it, pull it. And we have done that to some degree if it's not worked or not been fun or postponed it, if it feels like it needs more development and it's still valid, but it can't, you know, it's going to delay development to do it now. And we're basically packaging up the game that people know and expect the game to be. But there are, it's a very modular game, and there are quite a few other ways of playing that we're really excited about that are kind of coming down the pipeline and that we can talk about, but you know, we haven't got public playable versions of them yet. So the PS4 release will be the publicly playable version on Steam, have parity with that content. just with a more polished version that we're kind of just executing now, basically.
Yeah, I mean, just for anyone who doesn't know for any reason, because like you say, it seems to have been
There's loads of people around
for ages. But I mean, it is one of those games that, like, if you work in the games media or in just around games in general, you kind of take it for granted. Yeah, that's Gang Beasts. I know what that is. I know about
We've gone to a lot of events.
Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, for people who are listening who don't know what it's about, like, I mean, it's a fighting game after a fashion.
Yeah.
It's more like a wrestling.
It's like a 3D Rock'em Sock'em kind of thing. But, you know, you just push generally in the direction of travel that you want to go in and flare your limbs. But there is like a base level of, there's a basic control scheme and the basic functionality, single button functionalities that you need to be competitive. And then there's a second tier where you can start to be extravagant in your meanness. And often that will fail dramatically, and that's where a lot of the humor comes from. So
I mean, it's meant to be played for laughs for the most part. I mean, I'm useless at it whenever I've played it before. I fall into fire and things that grind, well, they don't really grind you up.
Specified hazardous machinery is our generic term for those levels.
But I mean, I'm vibing it. I'm glad that it's in this. So are we talking weeks away from being?
We honestly don't know. We've never been able to set on a date because we haven't gone through certification. And even when we've approved to release, which I think it's pretty close now, we would still have to sit down with publishers, well, with our publisher, Double Fine, and with Sony to set a release date that makes sense so we can have documentation and all that other stuff released that we've been working on behind the scenes, but we haven't fully made public yet. So just to give us a few weeks just to make sure the launch goes as smoothly as possible. And also we need to scale up more server capacity, and there's a few things behind the scenes happening there. But we have about 800,000 players currently. Like, not...
How many?
800,000 owners of the game. They're not all playing currently.
800,000 people have this game that isn't out yet.
Yeah. Which we didn't expect.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that we basically quadrupled the audience for the game in December because we were on sale.
Yeah.
And we had to kind of scale up and manage that capacity. And obviously, we don't have servers everywhere, so there's been some issues around that. And that's the whole matchmaking thing is... The kind of final thing to make that a smooth experience. So we're trying to improve that so we don't have long browser lists, and you know, because that caused some confusion with the naming conventions and stuff like that. And we use Amazon Web Services, and their naming schemes are somewhat confusing because they name cities even though they're more they have more coverage than that. So you know, we want to kind of just standardize that so people don't have to think about what they're doing. They can just get into a game and play, you know.
Yeah. I hope everyone's enjoying the background noise here as well. It's good. I mean, I've come to watch. This is a quiet bit of Rez, it should be pointed out. And gentlemen, I will say as well, just because I noticed you doing it, James, we have to talk into the microphone like this.
Sorry.
It's fine. I always forget to tell people.
I just came straight from my media training as well.
So. Yeah, I'm not very good at this kind of thing. But Gang Beasts, I'm psyched for that coming out. I'm really psyched.
Yeah, we are. We're more excited. Well, I personally am more excited about the co-op stuff that's coming as well, because that's actually, for me, more fun than the competitive stuff. Even co-op stuff descends in violence often, but you have the option. You
beat up your best friend all the time, right? Yeah, that's what we do. You know, that's exactly why we get married and stuff. We're not quite that. Anyway, Knights and Bites is more cooperative with less physical violence.
Less physical violence, for sure.
Yeah, although I was just sat on a bike, and it feels like someone's assaulted my backside. Yeah,
I apologize, was it worth it for the glamorous bike?
I enjoyed the little tootly horn that was in front of it. I should point out that for Rez, Foam Sword, and they said Foam Loaf, which would have just been that's the project that's
super
coming.
Group.
Right. It's the super group of the indie development scene. But yeah, you got a little kids bike that you sat on when you played it, which I'm sure was a great idea at the time. In practice, all the people walking around kind of like this
you played the demo, did you?
Illustrative of how many people played your demo. But yeah, I mean, Knights and Bites is something that we actually wrote about when Waypoint was Vice Gaming, so last year, probably about a year ago, I think I spoke to you, Mew, about it, and I thought it looked cool then, and it was, I think it just reached its Kickstarter target back then.
I think we just launched our Kickstarter campaign. Yeah.
It may have been. I would have told myself off if it was before the campaign was finished. Possibly. It might have been when you met your target.
Maybe.
I don't want to set precedence here by covering games before they've met their target. It's like, why are you talking about that game and not our game? Oh, for fuck's sake, guys, just back down. I immediately kind of like, you know, love the aesthetic of it. It's cutesy without being cloyy. It's super nice, and I don't really know. I mean, Kate, you're good with cute things. I mean, how cute is this game?
It's very cute. Was that a good segue?
Yes.
it's so cute. It's so cute. My eyes fell out Is that a good level of cute to have? That's
they
how cute it was.
I
well, the podcast listeners don't know that. You could keep up the facade. Oh, fine. It's fine. Let's never do improv together.
No.
Anyway, back to games, video games. Do you want me to talk about this
you
one?
Can,
shall I, shall
me,
I take point? Is that a sports
you
thing?
You
I don't know. So I sat on the tiny tricycle, and now I never want to sit down again. but the game itself was great because it's all about sort of nostalgia and being a child. So what did that come from?
I guess just trying to remember, like really concentrate on what was important, you know, to ourselves when we were kids. You know, we both had very different backgrounds where we grew up. Moo was in the States. I was in Cornwall. You were near Disneyland.
Yep.
And I
wow.
Yeah. And
nice.
Weirdly, I grew up next to a disused Wild West theme park in Cornwall. So, you know, there's all these parallels.
Nice.
And differences. And I mean, a lot of the game is about being a kid, like really utilizing your bike as that first moment in a kid's life where you really have a bit of independence. You know, mm-hmm. you can actually, you know, just keep going, you know, as long as you've got enough, like, you know, Maltesers that you've stolen and what have you. You could just keep on going until you fall off the edge of the world. So yeah, we're just trying to capture that kind of imagination and energy of kids that want to go on an adventure and have a good time and like learn about each other, learn about the adult world, you know, all the weird things that adults do that they don't quite understand, and then find treasure, all these kind of items that are to an adult are kind of disgusting, you know, like owl pellets and maggots and bird eggs and bits of rusty metal and all of this stuff, and just like filling their pockets up with it so that they can go back to town and try and convince some adult shopkeeper that he should like sell you a bike upgrade with a load of like disgusting rotting insects. So, yeah, it's a really cute game.
I mean, are you worried that that's going to make children try that at home?
I hope they will.
Yeah? I feel sorry for the adults, but that's fine. Like, they've had enough life. They're used to these things. They've had enough life. Yeah, they can deal with it. There's lots of little references to, like, being a kid in the game. Like, you make the sort of room noises when you're riding around and... as you said, you collect the treasure, like the little things you get on bread packets that hold the bread in, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really nice one.
It was like, it was one of the things we decided, like, we actually told them about this idea of like, oh, we're going to have loot and it's going to be much more about like things we treasured in our childhood rather than things adults actually treasure. And then the Kickstarter backers just had a million stories about, oh, when I was a kid, I collected these things. I found it. And we thought, oh, why don't we just, you know, have you guys post a ton of them and we'll pick one and we'll actually make it for you guys.
Really?
And so they posted a ton. Rex went through them and actually recorded a video of him drawing this bread clip and putting it in the game. So that's actually one of the specific things that our Kickstarter backers came up with.
I still consider that treasure. Those things are great.
Yeah.
Like
you
can flick them around.
Yeah,
you can
put your finger in them and just like, I don't know, enjoy the like mild pain of it just being stuck on the end of your finger.
It's a different kind of game. What's it been like working as someone from Cornwall, which is not even really UK? It's a very weird part of the UK. I like it very much. And then you're from California, very different. Both can grow palm trees, but But what's it been like trying to sort of combine the childhoods and learning about each other's childhoods and being like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, so we went out to dinner last night and Rex told a story about his sheep when he was growing up. And
of
it's
course.
Funny because we've both gone through the same childhood trauma of having pets that your parents then ate.
Yes.
Which is horrifying because I had pet ducks and my family, Chinese American, you know, one day I came home and I'm like, where are my ducks? And then just like, dinner. I'm like,
I came into the kitchen. There was a plastic bag on the floor. I went, ooh, someone's been shopping, opened it, headless duck. And I was like, well, okay. So, yeah, I can relate.
Yeah, all the three of us can share this. But, I think there's a lot of universals about childhood, regardless of where you grew up. And, you know, I think, you know, Anaheim, despite having Disneyland, you know, until you actually do get your bike, you are trapped basically on your block and the kids on your block. And I was, like, definitely the weird kid because, you know, my parents were very different from everyone else's parents. Most kids were actually banned from my house because we were, like, the weird Chinese family on the street.
You kept killing the animals.
Yeah, we kept murdering the animals. So the funny thing is they were mostly banned for the animals. Because they're just like, well, the ducks are going to bite our kids and blah, 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 blah. And then we murdered the animals and they still weren't allowed over. So
Boo.
What can you do?
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Like, have there been any details from each other's childhood where you're like, what? That doesn't happen. That's magical. I can imagine coming from Cornwall, there's all sorts of magical details, right?
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I can't actually think of them at the moment. Yeah, I mean, it's not a lot of pop culture, actually, in my childhood. Like, well, some of my earliest memories were, like, you know, castrating lambs and doing things like this.
Oh, my God.
magical.
Yeah.
There's definitely been a lot of things that have been implemented in the game that I have to ask, what is that? So, like, we have the Pisky Park, which is the theme park that our demo is actually set in. And I'm like, what is a Pisky?
Have you spelled it wrong?
Yeah, I think that's not right. And then in whatever you destroy one of the breakables, like, you know, these cool catchphrases come out, and one of them was Ansome, and I was just like, did you misspell awesome? And he's just like, no, this is like the cool, this is the thing to say when you were a Cornish kid.
Oh, yeah. Really? So, what does it mean?
Well, it's just handsome, but without the H.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Ansome. Yeah. Right. Nice. Learning. Yeah. I'm learning things.
I don't have any of my accent left, unfortunately. Otherwise,
I would do it. You could ham it up a little bit.
I could do.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I need to get some cider inside me.
I'm not from that part of the Britain exactly, but like I'm from Hampshire. So if you start going that way,
then if eventually, my dad phoned me up
you end up going further and further west, and there you are, you're in Cornwall. I love it, isn't it? That's the way they say wall.
Is that right?
I don't know. Possibly something to that
effect.
That's
very good. Yeah.
Thank you very much. That was like their three consecutive summers or something. But yeah, sorry, I was briefly distracted then by fellow games journalist Josh West, who cameoed on the podcast silently. I wanted to this kind of event where people like yourselves come, and like you were saying, James, like you've shown the game off loads already. I guess you'd like coming back, though, you know, you guys, you know, and coming back, showing off and seeing other people and what they're doing and what ideas you can steal.
There's a number of reasons. Like, before we started this, we didn't know any other game developers. So the first show we ever did was EGX Res, apart from a small local meetup in Middlesbrough where we tentatively took our laptop out and showed it to a few people. And then it got played all night. Very, very buggy, very early prototype, but it gave us the confidence to actually consider that we could be game developers. But we don't have enough people in the office to be a test 8 player, so we need to do events just to learn about that. And, you know, maybe that making it 8 player was a mistake, but we want to own our mistakes and honor them because there are definitely people who like the carnage of playing that way. So, but also we meet up with other people. It gives us a slight break occasionally from development. We don't take everybody. We try and do it in a really frugal way, and we tend to take people who are not working on anything key that's going to delay development. But it's also just, you know, for us learning, because, like, you know, we're building a business, workflows, learning about game development, and trying to promote and support a somewhat successful game all at the same time. And we need advice to minimize the mistakes we make and try and give the community the best value that we can, because we do feel genuinely incredibly grateful for having that support, because we do see a lot of people who don't have that level of support, and you know, we don't have to worry at this point about budgets and things like that, because we've been successful enough that we can just focus on using what money we have to improve the game, and that's what we're doing. We, you know, we have partnerships with a number of companies to kind of fill in where we have kind of key technical skill shortages, or where it's just going to be more efficient, or where it's just the kind of work that we don't want to be, like network engineers, you know, and we're not going to be good network engineers if we try. So, you know, it took us a long time to get to a point where we felt we'd had enough resources and the game was stable enough to kind of look at implementing those things. And that's why it's been a somewhat kind of protracted and confusing development period, because there's things that the community wanted that we felt we hadn't committed to, but we were told we had. And we still wanted to honor that because of that confusion. And, you know, it's commercially, it's the best thing for us anyway. But the main thing is, you know, if you don't have friends around, you can play the game. You know, it's a different experience to local multiplayer, but we still want to prioritize local multiplayer. And we're getting back to that stuff now. Now online is effectively finished. So, as in, the development is finished.
Right,
we're not taking it down.
And I mean, you mentioned the support then. I mean, you're both games are being published by Double Fine, right?
Yes.
Or you've got publishing support. I mean, what does that do for the projects? And also, I was wondering if it, because, you know, we see some other developers, I suppose you've got Curve, Devolver, things like that. These things are almost becoming like you would say, like a cool indie labels, like in music, right? Stables and stuff. Like, that's Rough Trade, that's XL or something. I mean, that's quite cool, isn't it? Like, I don't remember games really doing this before. This is the indie had to get through its kind of teething period, I suppose, and then through Summer of Arcade et al., and then into this stage. And now we kind of get these little groups. I mean, do you guys kind of feel like you're in this family in a way?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, definitely. I've never felt cool, but you know, I think like Devolver and Double Fine and some of the stuff that's happening in this country.
Yeah, we've got Enix Square Collective, haven't they?
Yeah, all that stuff. I mean, we spoke to a lot of these companies early on, and we were like, for Double Fine, we were the fourth game, I think. So, you know, we were trying to learn from other people, but then, you know, despite our mistakes and you know, development and you know, learning and difficulties and all that stuff, we've still managed to make a successful game. It's difficult to assess what a publisher gives to us, and I think we could have probably self-published, but having somebody else who's had that experience to talk to, and also industry contacts, like the Sony deal was brokered by Double Fine, all that kind of stuff, just to have somebody to go to and say, like, we want to do this, who do we speak to? You know, Greg at Double Fine has amazing number of contacts, and you know, everybody seems to like him and support the things that he's wanting to do, so that's really useful for us.
That's something that I hear a lot in successful indie games. It's like, you know, that person was nice and that's why we worked with them.
Yeah.
Like that's good, isn't it? That's positive. I mean, I would hate it if you came to these things, you know, some slime ball in a suit came up to you and was like, I want to publish your game, guys.
Yeah.
Be like, maybe.
We had that. We had a very aggressive Russian publisher who wanted to release the Unity 4 prototype that had only been in development for 3 or 4 months, full of microtransactions. You know, we don't do microtransactions, and we have no plan for doing that because we have a lot of kids playing the game and families playing the game, and like, why would we fleece them? You know, we as long as we have enough money coming in to sustain our families and the company itself, and then we can at least get some way into the next game, that's perfect. We've more than achieved what we wanted to set out to do, because like, we didn't expect to be looking at console releases until like 2020, you know. We thought we'd be doing mobile games and contract work, but we're not qualified for contract work because we have no experience in the industry. So, you know, the first two things we did a Halloween festival, we did animatronics for that, and we did a climbing app, strangely, for Sheffield Hallam University that was just a prototype.
I love that if that climbing app was like as sort of...
I can't even remember it.
Well, you know, as sort of chaotic as gang beasts can be.
Like, it was a very simple prototype made quite quickly.
Sheffield students with broken limbs.
Well, in the first... 3 years of the company, we earned £1,300.
Sorry, £1,300?
£1,300,
yeah. I mean, even I know that's not very much.
And our dad's best friend still owes us £500. He's the Mormon made the Halloween festival.
Called out, mate. on air, inverted commas.
I should mention, my grandmother killed a field mouse, decapitated it with a fire guard, tried to stop it from going behind the furniture, and then panicked, threw it on the fire. It made the most incredible hissing noise. Just have an animal killing story.
I was wondering when...
That's
what the podcast is about.
Just animal killing. I'm glad you got the console done before. I want to shift just slightly to a slightly more serious thing. Slightly. I'm glad you said getting stuff done before 2020, because for all we know, come 2020, we'll all be gone. We'll all be dead in the nuclear fire that's brought about by the world as we know it. Not me personally, no, but you know, I don't know, someone wants to like bring back coal or something. We'll see how that goes for the climate, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, no politics, apart from a little bit of politics, because this is the first time we recorded post Article 50. And like, you know, got a couple of British development teams here.
Yes.
I was reading the UKIE report, which I'm guessing you all saw, you know,
saw the email.
Yeah, well, that's enough. Basically, they said this isn't going to be very good.
No.
Don't have to dive too much into it, but it would be remiss of me to not mention it. You know, for British indies, do you see it being problematic? Like, because there's a lot of reliance on movement of, like, talent, basically. People come to the UK to work on games.
Yeah. Well, we haven't actually hired anybody that worked in the industry previously. We've just brought in friends to help us because they understand us and what we're trying to do, and they can have that patience. And we, you know, we have some people set up PAYE yet, but we're still going through that whole process because, like, we got popular before we set everything up, you know, because we were doing things part time and in our spare time and just doing game jams, hoping that something would take off. But like, for us, we are strangely international. Like, I think over Christmas, our second largest market was South Korea,
cool.
In terms of Steam sales, and because of
big esports
where that
scene.
Money's coming from, and we're really
big esports,
interested in that stuff at the moment, long term. Nothing that's going to affect anything coming soon.
This is where I go like about seriously. That kind of stuff. You want to take Gang Beasts into a tournament esport?
We've been to Evo. We've been
amazing.
I think twice actually, and there's a few other things. But we're talking to a couple of people who have identified us as a potential for that, and we do need to take information from them. Yeah. And it's never going to be truly competitive in the sense of these really finely balanced games, because the whole point of Gang Beasts is it's not balanced.
Yeah.
And there's no intention to make it balanced. So if you're aware, if you have a beard. That's a flaw. in life, I do.
I was looking around.
It's a flaw. You can be dragged around by your beard, or we do have some costume parts that have been exploits, but we've kind of largely solved that now. Yeah. But
wedgies.
If you're bold enough to do that, then you kind of live by your choices and die by your choices. Yeah. And if somebody ruins
grow a beard at your
own
risk.
Your fault. Yeah. So we are looking at different body shapes and sizes for some post-launch updates and things like that.
Yeah.
But we just want to make sure that nothing we're introducing now changes the core experience that people have of playing the game, because people that have seen it at an event or on YouTube and things like that, that's the game they want to play. Mm. They don't know about the story mode and all the other things that we've got planned, and that's why we're kind of splitting development so we can leave early access, get the PS4 version out so people have that, and then we can start to tease the new content and drop it on a more regular cycle.
In terms
of payments and things like that, because we pay in different currencies and things like that, it doesn't really affect us significantly in that. In fact, we're probably more profitable because of it. Because
of the poor pound right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we get more pounds, basically. As long as we don't spend them, if the pound does recover, we may have a profit.
It'll be okay, yeah. I mean, I was thinking more like, teams do swell, don't they, to get things finished. I mean, maybe your teams are not the case, but I don't know, it just... I'm guessing there's other people here, like, they see rocky roads ahead. I don't know. Is this the first time you've had any doubt or something about, like, what the future could hold in terms of, there are these amazing people who work over in Germany or something. I would like them to come and work with us on our next project or something. But maybe that's still going to be difficult. We just don't know. Uncertainty.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it's just our team of two. So, it's probably not going to affect, hiring strategies or anything like that. But I know it just makes me a bit sad.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's reasonable.
And, when you're making a very personal game, those tears soak into the fabric of the thing.
Yeah.
So, our little game about a small, isolated island... cut off from the mainland that has to look to its children to guide it into a happier future, could be a thing.
it's a interactive metaphor. I was going to say on so many levels, which is what you would say there traditionally, but just on one big obvious level, really. Well, cool. I mean, thanks for I'm confused. I'm like you a bit. Sad right now. Yesterday I was really fucking angry, but today I'm more just sad and thinking about going to the pub, so that's quite nice, really. Cool, amazing. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Kate, thanks for joining in.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, where can people who are listening to this, hopefully they stuck it out, hopefully it wasn't popping and fizzing all over the place. I'll find out when I listen back. I listened to my headphones, it sounded all right. Where can they find your games online?
There's foamswordgames.com, and then there is our Twitter account, which is foamswordgames as well. So just follow that and find us there.
Yeah.
For us, gangbeast.game, or you can get a link to it from the Double Fine website also, which is doublefine.com, I think, from memory.
It seems reasonable.
I've been there for a while.
Yeah.
<We're> busy.
Haven't been on that website.
Yeah.
We've
got some good other Double Fine Presents games coming, obviously. Happy to be associated with those games.
I like the way that, little kind of... houses are forming of cool
and
stuff.
They invited me to the Slack channel yesterday.
That's like the inner circle.
I could learn something. I joined up to the Double Fine Slack after Day of the Devs, and everybody was just set up for Day of the Devs, that particular one, so everybody left the day I joined, I think. So
is it just like loads of
character
memes
building?
Because
it all closed down. I don't think I saw the historical content, or maybe that channel was closed down, but not a particularly interesting way to end the podcast. Sorry about that.
But then again, what is an interesting way to end a podcast? Kate Gray.
You can follow me at How Not to Draw.
No, we know about that already. All right, yeah, you can follow Waypoint at Waypoint. You can get us online at waypoint.vice.com. This has been Rezzed live, inverted commas, because by the time you listen to this, Rezzed will still be on, but
we won't
be here. We might all be dead. Oh, God, I hope not. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.